Hello, everybody. Today I had Lauren Garrity on my podcast, someone I was very excited to speak with. Actually, I've been looking forward to this podcast all week. Lauren Garrity is the director over at Communities in School, and I mentor through Communities in School, and I'm on a four-year program where my mentees, I mentor him when he's a freshman, and I hopefully follow him towards his graduation. During the podcast, there was moments where we were breaking up and coming in and out. Just be patient. You could skip through 15-second segments to where you can hear us. Just please keep listening. The podcast does not end when we go silent. We're just having technical difficulties. So yeah, please listen through the whole podcast and let me know what you think. Thanks.
I was really excited to talk to you, like, because you had your presentation at Valero.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm incredibly humbled that you reached out to talk a little bit more.
Yeah, and I just started this podcast, so I've had it for 10 days, or no, like almost 2 weeks, and it's my 7th episode.
Wow. Yeah, that's really getting to work on the podcast. Great job.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you more about basically what is it that you do with Communities in School, and also understanding more about adverse childhood experiences, like
Absolutely.
Going back to what we talked about. So what is it, like, what's your position with the company, and then what is it that you do, like, on a daily basis, or like
Absolutely.
The overall goal of your company, or like what you do?
Yeah. So I'm Lauren Garrity. I'm the director of strategic initiatives for Communities in Schools of San Antonio. So Communities in Schools is a nonprofit organization that basically exists to provide school age access to a multitude of things that might be barriers to their academic success, right? So whether they have basic needs issues, things like food insecurity or utilities issues, right? We have access to emergency funds to make sure it keeps the literal lights on in their house. On top of that, we help connect students to physical and mental health resources. A lot of our kiddos, due to issues with time, transportation, taboo, treasure, you know, all of those things are barriers to getting medical or mental health access. So we help connect students to those resources. We also connect students with mentors, as you are very familiar with, Samuel. Thank you for being a mentor for our kiddos. And then we also do a number of other important things to make sure that whatever is getting in the way of some of our at-risk students and their academic success, we try to remove all those barriers so that they can focus on their school and focus on their futures. So our agency in San Antonio right now is in 14 different school districts, and we're in over 100 different schools, and we work all day, every day with kiddos to make sure they get what they need to be successful. And my role at Communities in School, so I'm the director of the grants and contracts department. So I do a lot of really boring stuff like contract revisions and negotiating with people to try to make sure that our staff are taken care of. And I'm also in charge of seeking out really innovative funding streams and making sure that in the ways that we grow, we do so in the ways that are the most needed. So a lot of the growth around the mental health initiatives is recent, but it's also something that has recently come to the forefront of need in our education community.
Okay, that's awesome. So I'm actually donating to Communities in School through United Way.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, so I wasn't aware, like, I don't know, because also United Way, there's multiple agencies you could donate to.
Yeah,
but like
absolutely.
I never noticed, because I've been donating for the past maybe 3 years since I've been with Valero, but I've never noticed Communities in School because there's multiple agencies. I never know which one to choose, and it's so hard to like pick one. But since I did find out through I was talking to Wendy Godinez at Valero, And I was asking, like, is there an option? She's like, yeah, there's an option. I was like, I've never noticed. Like, I feel so bad. But I'm definitely going to donate.
It's a long list of different agencies. Yeah. It definitely is.
I'm definitely
going to
donate
I think that it might be multiple communities and schools that you could pick on that, on our particular United Way form. So I think that the United Way of like the Greater Bexar County area also includes communities and schools of New Braunfels, which is called South Central Texas, I believe. So pick the one that says San Antonio. Anybody who's listening to this podcast and you've got a choice to pick an agency with United Way, pick communities and schools of San Antonio. Not that I'm competitive or anything.
No, for sure. For sure. So then that way everybody has able to do their job, since you know you impact the community so greatly. And I've been mentoring with communities in school just for one school term. It was the first year, like trial run at Valero. So I'm going to continue with my same student, and I may or may not pick up another student. I'm not sure yet. But the current kid I know, I mentor through CIS is Jimmy. And he's at Highlands High School. He's a freshman. Well, he's going to be a sophomore now, but he was a freshman. And then I also mentor through Big Brothers, Big Sisters, a 10-year-old. He's in he's going to fourth grade. His name's Brady. And then Joe, he's at Edison. He's a junior now. And I had one named Gio, but I lost him. He was at Garcia, but then he moved. And they didn't tell me, like, they couldn't tell me anything. So I saw him. I saw him the other day, and he was so happy. He was like, "Oh my god, I've been like, I missed you."
Oh, like, that's me a great. He grew, yes.
He was a fifth grader, and then I lost him when he went to sixth grade. But he grew like 4 inches. I don't know how he's like my height now.
I love it. That's great. So about how many hours a week would you say, or how many hours a month, whatever's easiest for you to estimate, do you spend in this mentoring role for these kids who absolutely need it?
Oh, for sure. I mentor every week, 8 out of 12 or whatever year.
Yep.
I mentor every week. There's a school going on.
That's great.
I mentor every week, and then I'm on the Valero Volunteer Council, so I coordinate volunteer events. I'm coordinating for United Way SAM Ministries coming up in August. I'm in charge of cleaning out the gutters for SAM Ministries, and then I have the Club Unicorn in the medical area that I'm co-coordinating that event. But I'm always doing stuff. Valero keeps me really busy. I'm very much passionate about volunteering. Just because I too, like, where I grew up, I went to like SISD schools, and I grew up like in the area everyone's like has problems. I'm gonna just name like risks that I know, and it's unfortunate, but like in middle school, you know, kids smoking marijuana, drinking alcohol, tobacco. There was like kids that were depressed because their families, you know, were dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And there was also disabled kids like that, you know, were in wheelchairs. I remember them like specifically, and it was hard for them to feel part of the community of being in middle school, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone thinks about, well, I'm sure there's people that think about this like yourself. But for the most part, like an everyday person just so busy with their lives, they don't know, like maybe they don't have the information, which is why like I really wanted to talk to you.
Well, Samuel, why do you think you know? Like, why do you think you pay attention to things that a lot of other people that you've been surrounded with haven't paid attention to?
Mainly because I have mentors and they tell me. And just I talk a lot, so like I have a lot of questions. Like I'm very I question everything.
Yeah, curiosity. Like, that's awesome.
That's just like what work. Like I'm very, and also to answer your question, I kind of went around it. To answer your question, is like where I grew up, you know, in area code 78207. And it was rough, like, growing up, like, seeing my mom struggle and stuff. And I kind of know, like, what these kids that I mentor are going through. When my parents got divorced when I was 14. And like, I understand these boys need a male figure because I was always seeking an older male figure in my life, which is why I have two mentors right now who I constantly hang out with like every month. Or
that's amazing.
Yeah, so I definitely know.
How did you connect with your mentors?
Who are my mentors?
How did you connect with your mentors?
Through Valero. Or
really,
like, I just met them at Valero. One of them's named Samuel Esqueda. He follows my podcast, so he's gonna hear this. But he mentors me. Like, I ask him about investing, how to start my business, how to start a podcast, how to help people, how to help my family. Like, I'll ask him situations at work. Like, I don't know what to do. There's a conflict. I'm having a conflict with a gentleman. Like, how do I address the situation? And he'll help me. And I'm kind of the same way with my mentees, but their questions are more to their level in life. So, like, when should I study? Like, for example, Jimmy, freshman at Hayden's, how should I prioritize my time with sports? He'll ask me about dating, you know, girls at his age. He talks about girls. It sounds so bad. He talks about girls, you know, his 14. And
he's so a high schooler. It's definitely, mean, you can't pretend it's not a thing in high school.
It's definitely teaching me how to talk to a younger individual. Like, how to break things down to where they understand it for their, like, it's like, especially if I'm talking to my 9-year-old Brady, he'll ask me questions, like a bad word. So I'm like, well, I've never thought, like, I know what that word means, but I've never thought, like, why you can't say it, what it means, but like how to explain it to a younger person. It just makes you like, it's making me like learn to express myself for different levels of like someone's age. Like, who I mentor.
Absolutely.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, we might be wise to people in one context, but in another context, we need the other person's wisdom, right? So you're leveraging both being a mentee and having mentees, which I think is really incredible. It's this really wonderful intergenerational piece that you're contributing to. So thank you, Samuel, on behalf of CIS for being a mentor for us. And then on behalf of just like all of the other children whose lives you're enriching. I just think it's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you for, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm doing anything special, but there needs to be more mentors.
Oh, you are. Trust me.
And
yeah,
the
exactly.
only way I know of this, like, I wouldn't have never met you if it wasn't for Wendy Godinez at Valero, because she's the one that coordinated communities in school within Valero. And it's like, I didn't know. So she does a lot. She was volunteer of the year 2 years ago. So
totally deserved. Yeah. We would not have it inspire you with Valero if Wendy hadn't been working there. She is absolutely critical to our partnership, and we're super grateful for everything that she's done.
And we're
us.
Grateful too, because, you know, we're looking to help. Like, we just don't know where to go, who to ask. There's people that want to mentor kids, but they don't like have the information. Like, where do I sign up? Like, they want to sign up, they just haven't met the right person. And I've been kind of not, I don't know if promoting is the right word. I've been spreading the word, like, yo, like, hey, we're going to have more kids coming. Like, we need more mentors. Like, I'm not trying to pressure you, but like, if you want to volunteer, it's only once a month. They bring them here. Like, I try to tell them it's super convenient. It's very, like, I feel better about myself when I mentor. And it kind of gives me something to look forward to.
Yeah, no, there's science behind that. There's a lot of science behind when you give, right? And whether that's giving time, giving a present, whatever that might be, it is actually more fulfilling for a person, right? Like, those serotonin and endorphin triggers happen much more profoundly when you are giving to somebody else versus receiving something. So it makes sense that when you're in that moment of mentoring and that afterglow after you leave Jimmy, right, and you spend the next couple hours thinking about, man, we had great conversation, and what are some other things I can do with this kid? Like, there's a reason that you keep going back for that, and it's filling that reward response that humans are just, you know, biologically driven to trigger. So, but most people don't realize how fulfilling it is to engage in a really authentic way with another human. They take it for granted. But the science around relationships is that that is the most important thing, right? It is the critical protective factor for every child as they're growing up, is to be surrounded by healthy adults who encourage them, give them hope, and help them have a positive self-view. So what you're doing is so much more than just like making a $20 donation. It's actually the most important thing you can do for a child.
Yeah, going to the most important, like, I want to talk about brain development in a younger, in early adulthood for, I guess, kids. As far as what I'm trying to get at is a kid that grows up with both parents versus a kid that grows up in a toxic environment, and how that relates to the synaptic density.
It's kind of wonky, so that's okay.
I'm trying to remember what you were talking about.
I'm an ACE master trainer, and ACE stands for adverse childhood experiences, like you referred to earlier. And this is something that, you know, I will talk about at any dinner party, in any room, at any table that I'm invited to, because this is actually what I consider, and what many, many people now, including people at the CDC, at our national legislative, you know, entities, they're now calling this the greatest public health crisis of our time. And it's because these adverse childhood experiences that our youth are experiencing on a daily, on an annual basis, right? These not only are just terrible experiences for them to have in that moment or in those years, but these are things that affect the developing brain, right? So we always expect, we have this constant, you know, refrain of children are resilient, but children are only as resilient as we give them the capacity to be. And so if you have a child who is exposed to what we call toxic stress, and that's levels of cortisol that are way too high, it impacts their brain development, which impacts the rest of their future. Because if their brain doesn't develop in this, you know, appropriate fashion, then they have trouble controlling their behavior. They have trouble with cognitive functioning and emotional functioning. And all of those things lead to much greater implications for their health and life outcomes. So it really is a huge deal when you start to think about a child who has had four or more ACEs, right? And as I shared with you in that presentation, there's 10 categories of ACEs. And these are everything from having parents who are divorced to having had experienced sexual or physical abuse, yes. Right? Includes things like a parent having been incarcerated, or a parent with mental health issues or substance abuse issues. So there's 10 different categories. But if you are a child who can say, four of those have happened to me or more, you have a high ACE score. And a child with a high ACE score is 50% more likely to engage in illicit substances. They are, you know, seven times as likely to struggle with or to have 50 or more intimate sexual partners, right? Which is in itself a high risk activity. So there's all of these really strong correlations, not to mention the correlations with their likelihood of having ischemic heart disease, pulmonary lung disease. So there's, when we start to think about all of the money that is spent on these downstream outcomes and connecting it to what happened to them as children, we start to think differently about, if we protect our children, if we ensure that our children from day one, right, from the moment that mama realizes there's a baby in her belly, understands that what's happening in that moment will impact the brain development of the baby in utero. And then when they come into the world, making sure we're protecting that child, nurturing that child, loving that child, because that is the ultimate preventative medicine.
Okay. I'm processing everything you're saying. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the ACE study that you gave me, which has the adverse childhood experiences, the 10, you know, the household dysfunction, that includes substance abuse. You said this earlier, parents separate or divorce, mental illness, battered mothers, criminal behavior. And then you have the neglect, which is emotional, physical, and abuse, emotional, physical, or sexual. And like growing up, and I'm sure there's going to be people listening to this that I grew up with, but I'm going to just say this. Growing up, I noticed the kids around me had like emotional issues. I never realized this because I was a kid, but now looking back, like in football practice, kids like not being able to control their emotions, or they just quit, but they just don't have that support system.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew.
That's right.
But like now looking back, like I know a lot of kids, including myself, where I just like break down crying, like why don't mm-hmm. I have a dad, whatever.
Yeah. And maybe nobody taught you explicitly how to manage those big
right.
emotions,
and I
right?
always, because I played football or I ran track, I would use that as an outlet to get all that anger mm-hmm. and aggression
Absolutely.
Out. And my coaches would always ask me, like, what's wrong? And I would just be, I would just ignore them. Because I thought it would be embarrassing to tell them how I felt, or like being afraid of being made fun of or picked on. Growing up, I used to wear like high waters, like I was rowing to school, but in the area I was in, like if you succeed in the classroom, you're going to get picked on for being mm-hmm. like smart. You're going to get made fun of. So it was kind of, I'm not saying I'm a contrarian or anything, but just for where I was, it was definitely hard going against the grain, where everybody isn't like trying to be cool, not studying. Meanwhile, I'm trying to study, and it's kind of hard. Like people would throw, I remember people like throw my homework on the floor, like just make fun of me. And it's kind of, you know, I'm just in my head.
Yeah.
I'm like,
no, you're not the first person who has told me that like you live in these communities where teachers and other adults around you are telling you, no, if you work hard at school and you do well, then you have this brilliant future in front of you. But then you have this other part of your world that is explicitly telling you not to do those things, right? And making it difficult for you to do those things. So you were living in this world where you were having to try to find a way, what they call code switching, right? Where in one space you want to be a successful student, and in the other space you want your peers to respect you and to not bully you. So how do you find that balance? And it is really, really complex for our kids nowadays.
Yes. Also, like, some people that are listening to this aren't going to like what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say, like, growing up, my dad would, when I would get home, it's like when you're at school, I would get made fun of. And then when I come home, he would like put his beer on my homework, and then I would take it off, and he would get mad at me. And he's like, why do you need to do your homework or whatever? So it's like, it's like double. It's like, I can't succeed in school, and then at home, it's like I'm told not to succeed at home. But my mom did her best. She was working, or wherever she was at work on the weekends, it would just be my mm-hmm. dad. And like anything I would have, he would take from me, like money or anything. Like it could be sunglasses that I had, or just like he was very manipulative. He went to jail.
Yeah.
He went to jail for assaulting me.
So sorry,
Sam. Yeah, it's okay. Again, like, there's not going to be people in my family that like this, but I'm just going to say it. And now that I'm older.
It's your truth.
Now that I'm older,
it's your
like,
story.
I want to help younger kids. Like, I just want them to know that, like, I'll support them, not monetarily. Like, not with money, like with my time, with my words, with my actions. You know, I tell them to be nice, to treat others with respect. I mean, like, they have emotions. I have emotions. Sometimes, even with communities in school, someone, like, cussed at me. But we talk it out. Like, adults, they told me sorry. I told them not to worry about it. Like, I wasn't even thinking about it. But now I know how to express myself in a way where if I'm struggling with someone, I'm going to work it out with them. And I want to show my mentees by leading by example, by being a good person. Even when other people put you down, like it's because maybe something's going on in their personal life. They could be jealous because you want to succeed and maybe they can't. or they just, there's no reason. But I just tell them, you know, just like my, one of my mentees, I don't want to say a name per se, but he'll tell me of what's happening, like someone hit him or like, and so he had bruises. I'm not going to say which one, but one of my mentees had bruises and it made me very upset. Like someone hurt him and it kind of like hurt me. Like I really care about him.
Yeah.
So he's like, don't tell anybody. And then I told him, like, okay, like, I'm not. But as soon as we were done with our mentoring session, I had to let the counselor know. And
Yeah.
I just didn't want him to be mad at me because, you know, he's a little kid. So he doesn't want to be embarrassed, right? But I'm not trying to embarrass him. I'm just trying to help him. But I guess when they're younger, they just don't understand, or they're still developing.
Well, and depending on the context, right, they also want to protect whomever may have done that to them, whether it's a friend or a family member. I think at the end of the day, sometimes people are hurt by people that they're really attached to, and they don't want to see anybody taken from their home, or they don't want to see anybody get in trouble with the police. But what you're doing is this protective piece. And I don't think there's any shame in trying to protect another human, especially a child.
I agree with that. It was just hard being in the moment with my mentee, like him not understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was resolved. It was just hard at the time. And
I don't know if you in your role, you know, I mean, there are people who are mandated reporters, right? There are people like counselors, social workers, teachers, nurses, doctors, who if they even suspect a whiff of child abuse, they have to report it or they're liable, right? And that's not your place, but your place is to be an advocate for these children, especially since so many of these children don't have other adults in their life who are their champions and who are their protectors. And so it is okay for you to talk with a child about, hey, I'm concerned. Let's talk it out. You know, let's have a conversation about it. And if you really have conversation or, you know, concerns that need to be elevated, you have those right people to go to who can talk you through, like a counselor should be able to. When is the right time to maybe think about reporting something?
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely incorporate what you just said and with talking with them. I was just not familiar with the situation and how to break it down to where they understand why it's not okay.
Yeah.
But definitely, I won't let anything happen to them.
Yeah, I believe that.
But they do walk home, like a majority of them, you know.
Yeah.
Or they don't have money for food. So it's kind of like every time I see them, I want to give them, you know, a couple of dollars so they could buy something to eat. And it's just mentoring just makes me really happy, you know, I want to keep doing it. And
yeah, but like I said, it is your presence, not your presence.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so it is more about the fact that you are this human who sees them, hears them, acknowledges them for them and all of their unique majesty versus just another adult who's discrediting them because they look like this or have this skin color or live in this neighborhood. Like when a child feels seen, like really seen and really heard, it is incredibly powerful. And that is what you are giving to these children. And by children, I'm still talking about the high schoolers, right? Like, even an 18-year-old girl or an 18-year-old boy is still a child. Their brain does not finish developing until they're closer to 28 years old.
Right.
So you being them, there for them in those in critical developmental periods is so, so much more beneficial than, you know, saying, well, I can't hang out with you, but here's a $20 gift card to Target, right?
Yeah. The thing for me is just kind of hard telling the young ones no, the younger kids.
Oh yeah.
It's just kind of hard.
I get it.
I'm like,
I feel it. It's
not that, it's just a I don't know. I just give them whatever they want. Like, whatever.
That's fair.
I'm like,
I like talkies too. Yeah, that's cool. Let's get some talkies.
They, well, one of them likes Pokemon cards. So I'm like, however many you want, I'll just get them for you. Like, it's not a big deal.
Oh, that's adorable. So, no,
but
that's
I have
cute.
Noticed yeah. a change in behavior.
Cool.
From when I first met them, they would hit other. Man, I feel like I'm talking bad about them. I'm just like from the behavior no, from I when think, I first yeah. started mentoring them. Was a little adverse as far as how they okay. behaved with other students, what they said, how, like, physically, how they interacted. But mm-hmm. after I noticed, after a semester or half the school year, they'll start being happier. They're more nicer to their classmates. They don't act out for attention. They get better grades, they perform, they show up to school.
Yep.
It's just like a complete 180. Like, in it's kind of crazy, but then it makes a yeah. lot of sense if you talk about the science behind everything.
Exactly. Yeah, when a child feels like they belong somewhere, right? So for a lot of these kids, they didn't like almost similar to your experience where people were telling you school wasn't for you, right? School wasn't a place where you were going to be successful. A lot of these children feel that, even if they're not explicitly hearing that, they feel that, right? Just based on their community or their family, that school isn't the place for them. And so you're creating this idea that not only can they be successful in school, not only can they think about what future careers look like, you know, you coming from incredibly similar circumstances and now working in the accounting department at Valero, incredible story, right? So you give them hope, you give them promise, and you support them, right? Not only are you expanding their possibilities by illustrating what's possible, but you're saying, how do I help you get there? How do I help you take that next step? Here's my knee, dude. Step on my knee, and I'm going to metaphorically help you get to these different, you know, milestones in your mm-hmm. own life. And yeah, it does say like, okay, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to school today because I know what's possible for me. There's a lot of evidence about the power of mentoring. There just is so much evidence around that. And for the kids who maybe their mom is doing the best she can, but she's got to work three jobs to keep the house over their head, right? The roof over their head, to keep the lights on. Mom loves her kids more than anything else. But at the end of the day, she's got to move from job to job to job just to make sure kids have food and lights on in that house. So she doesn't have a lot of time to sit there and do flashcards and to play games and to do the nurturing and the enriching. And so when you leverage the community mentors to help mom out, right? It's helping all of the community. When we have at least two adults for every child to enrich them and pay attention to them, we all win.
I'm looking at the ACE prevention, like the legacy part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also processing everything you're saying.
When you left the ACE education session that I gave, what were like your next steps? I mean, you definitely emailed me to ask for like more research and information, but when you think about if or how this has changed the way that you work with your mentees or the way that you talk with your family or anything like that, has there been any change in those kind of aspects of your life?
More proactive as far as making a podcast to have you on to spread the information of the benefits of mentoring and to spread the information about the what adverse childhood experiences and how that impacts a child growing up. And I just want there to be kids that have hope, you know, with the single, I know there's a lot of parents that are, it's just like a single household. All the kids I mentor, single household mom. And I just wish there was someone else for them. And I want to build like a self-healing community where we all help each other. And I'm trying to figure out how to do that. So it's definitely changed how I view mentoring. And it made me realize a lot that I did not know. Hello, Lauren. I think we're breaking up, but can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
You're on now.
All right. Sorry about that.
You're fine.
So I was asking, you know, in the way that you were impacted by this information, did you talk to any of the other mentors at Valero about whether or not once they heard this information, if it helped them make sense of the behavior of their mentees or of the conditions that create this intergenerational, you know, kind of crisis issues with our families from underserved and disenfranchised communities?
I did talk to Laura Vaccaro, you know,
VP
at Valero.
Right.
And she was really just there for me because when you were giving the presentation, the topics you were talking about were very like sensitive, like what you're talking about kind of triggered me to walk away from the presentation. I wasn't realizing that the information you were presenting would affect me in that way. And we did talk about like the whole presentation that you gave about early childhood development, the effects like of like attributable risk, like mm-hmm. what this leads to, and it definitely like made us all like kind of step back, I'm not sure if this is the right words, like I was just like freaking out like about the information.
I think it's a totally appropriate word, Samuel. It is. I think for myself, right, when I stumbled upon this research about 5 years ago,
why are we talking about this? Why?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
So in San Antonio, like I mentioned, Dr. Bridger, who was the director of Metro Health, but now she's the assistant city manager, this is her jam, right? So she's from a public health perspective. And like I mentioned earlier, this is probably the greatest public health. Some people say crisis. I'd like to say opportunity, right? Like what is predictable is preventable, right? And now we know if you experience these things as a child, you are so much more likely to have these health struggles and these cognitive struggles and these life struggles. So let's just work on preventing it, right? So Dr. Bridger from her seat and the city, you know, kind of leadership is saying, how do we make sure everybody in San Antonio is trauma-informed? How do we make sure everybody in San Antonio knows that children at all costs need to be protected from these types of adversity, right? There are things that we can't prevent. We cannot prevent children experiencing the death of a loved one, right? Sometimes grandparents die, family members die, friends die. We can't prevent things like hurricanes or tornadoes, right? Really traumatic, terrible things. But what we can prevent are things like parents exposing their children to abuse, parents neglecting their children. We can prevent parents exposing their children to substances and to domestic violence. These are absolutely preventable, but it's about educating people so that they don't say, well, the kid was like 3 years old. They're going to forget it. They're never going to remember it. Like actually, that is imprinted on their brain. They may not be able to recollect a visual memory, but that affected the way their brain developed. And it also affected the way that they think relationships should be, right? So this is why you see this intergenerational piece is like, oh, okay, my relationship template, which is literally built into the synaptic density, is now that if I'm a woman, I can just expect to be hit, right? Or I can't trust a man ever because I now think all men will hit me. And so now I have issues developing thoughtful, authentic relationships with people because I can't trust any of them. So what happens to children at even the smallest of ages is absolutely held in the body. And we have to make sure every single person who is taking care of a child, working with a child, or having a child knows this information. And it's people like you in the business community who are going to make some of the greatest inroads on that, Samuel, because I'm here in the social services sector where we're all going to agree with one another, right? But it's moving this information into the other silos where people don't normally think about child development.
Right. And I never thought about it before. I'm going to be honest until you came to Valero.
Why would you? You didn't take any classes on it in college. It's not something that you don't have any children of your own, right? No. You wouldn't have done any reading yet on healthy childhood development. So outside of the youth sector and the health and human services sector, this has got a long ways to go. But it is hypercritical for every sector to know this. Because no matter what, almost all of us interact with children in one shape, way, or form, right? Right.
So working at Valero, I was talking to other mentors, like where they grow up, where they come from, what schools they went to, and most of them couldn't relate to me, for starters. And sometimes I know they have their own life experiences, I have mine, and it's easy for me to relate to the mentees because they are in the area codes where they're at risk, so I understand.
Yeah.
And there's mentors that have kids, so they're more nurturing, especially the women, so they act as a mother figure for the young ladies that are mentees. But there's some males where it's hard for them to understand like what they're going through, and I'm really just glad you're on because I want to spread like this information. Like I want more people to know, and I am repeating myself, but
yeah, this is one of those topics where you got to say it a lot of times for people to really start hearing it, because our society unfortunately has developed this idea that like it's the bootstraps mentality, that it doesn't matter what you experience. There are people who have made it on their own and been successful. So never use your life as an excuse for not being successful. But my challenge to anybody who believes in bootstraps is really think about those people who came from disenfranchised, underserved, low socioeconomic backgrounds. Those people who were able to come out of those complexities and become what we would traditionally define as a thriving adult, the common connection for all of those people is that they had at least one adult in their life to help them navigate the storm, right?
Right.
So sometimes when I'm giving this presentation, I get pushback from people. Well, I had a really hard life, but I'm okay. And I say, well, who was it in your life, right? Was it a teacher? Was it a coach? Was it a youth pastor? Was it a mom? Was it a dad? Was it a grandparent? Because I've never had one person say, I did this 100% on my own, right?
Right.
So it's about acknowledging that like you can live through some pretty darn tough stuff, but if you have some adults that are looking out for you, and in your case, it sounds like your mom had every single best intention in the world, but was working so hard to keep every thread together, right?
Right.
That sometimes the fabric got a little thin, but your mom adored you and loved you and wanted nothing but for your life to be wonderful. And then it also sounds like you did have some other people around you, and you currently surround yourself with people who encourage you and who provide you with that support and that hope and that optimism. So it's not hard. It's not like when we talk about the neuroscience, it can feel really hard to get your arms around it. But the most important thing that anybody listening to this podcast needs to know is that what everything comes down to, especially for the developing child, is relationships. Everything comes down to, in the research and the science, the most important protective factor is that these children have really amazing adults around them. If they can't afford to go to the museum, if they can't afford to go on experiential learning trips, that's okay, because they have an adult who's sitting there reading with them. They have an adult who is sitting there and helping them plan for their future, because they know that there's a reason to believe in a future, right? But the most important thing for brain development and for our social and emotional development is to be surrounded by healthy relationships. It's the context in which our brains develop. Literally, we have incredibly limited capacity to develop healthy brains if we are in a vacuum. And that's why when you see these studies that come out of orphanages, the children's brains are so, so malformed, because they didn't have the nurturing, healthy touch. They didn't have people speaking at them, doing this, what they call serve and return, right? When a baby makes a noise or points at something, having an adult respond to that triggers that brain development. And when that child is laying in a crib all day in an orphanage, maybe getting their you know, basic physical needs met, they get food, they have a roof over their head, somebody's changing their diaper, but nobody is holding, touching, engaging with that child, right? That is the critical, critical thing. So that's the most important thing I want to come across on this podcast, is if you do nothing else in this world different, be more relational in your approach to other people. It works for adults, and it's imperative for children.
Okay. In my personal life, I'm definitely, I know I'm not perfect, and no one is.
Nobody
I can
is.
Be mean sometimes, but I definitely try my best to get closure. Going back to discussing the post, presentation that you provided.
Mm-hmm.
You gave us an ACE score test to fill out, and on mine,
yeah.
I had 9 out of 10. I read one of the questions wrong. I thought it was all 10.
Well, either way, Samuel, like that's an insanely high score,
so,
right? If four or more is considered a high score, a 9 is like through the roof high.
So what I'm saying is, I was comparing, and there was people that had 0. So it was hard to relate. Like, they didn't understand what I'm talking about. Like, they didn't know why I got so emotional. Like, it was just hard to, I don't know. And it's not their fault, like, that nothing ever bad happened to them. Like, not saying that it should have, but they're definitely wanting to understand, which is why they're mentoring to help to give back, which is good. I just thought that was, a unique situation, like not being, like just being totally different from someone that works in the same building as you and right next to you. And
there's a radical disconnect between some of the things that children in our world experience that other children have no concept of. I mean, as they become adults, right, it's illustrated by their ability to succeed, their ability to project manage or goal set or time manage. And then the people who have never experienced complexity look at the people who've experienced significant complexity and judge them for it, right?
Right.
But that's why it is so important for people to realize, like, it's not about what's wrong with a person. It's about what happened to a person. Stop asking in your head the question, they didn't turn in their homework on time. What's wrong with this student? Actually, maybe they didn't sleep last night because the cops were at their house. Or maybe they didn't come to school today because nobody has washed their clothes in a month and they're too embarrassed to come to school. It is so much more important to ask what happened, right? What's the story behind the behavior? And so I know that you shared with me that you and a coworker, you were at an impasse. You weren't seeing eye to eye on something and you were feeling a little bit out of control, right? And this particular coworker has a very different life than yours. And so in those moments, when you acknowledge that you don't know someone's story, that's when you hit pause. That's when you hit the brakes and you say, actually, I don't have any context here. I don't know what's going on. And I am looking at everything at surface level. And you don't need to know someone's story. All you need to know is you don't know their story. And then to lead with empathy, right? Like, okay, before this escalates to a situation that we can't walk away from, right, that might result in somebody getting fired or, you know, might result in somebody having some kind of black mark put on them, how about we just take a step back and we really give ourselves the space that we need until we can approach something rationally, right?
Yes.
Because when that brain pops off, when your brain is hijacked by cortisol, in no way are you thinking with your rational prefrontal cortex. All you are doing is operating at a limbic level at that point. And that basically means you are in fight, flight, or freeze mode.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have like a kind conversation with somebody. You just need to give yourself some space and let that prefrontal cortex reengage.
Yeah. So for me, you know, like growing up in 78 zip code 78207, now I live in 78249. You mentioned that the people that live in 78249 have a life span 20 years longer than those that live
yep.
in the inner downtown.
In 78207.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm moving
to. That is specific data.
To my mom's
yeah.
house. My mom's disabled. She doesn't work. And I really want to help her. But it's hard. Like, I wish I had.
I love that you want to give back, though. Yeah.
No, and
but I
know
love that you want to get back and support her.
I know she's going to listen to this. And I'm putting my emotions out there, like, to everybody. But it's who I am. Like, I'm just telling my story. And
yep. That's your story. That's right.
Going
Own
back
it.
To where I grew up, there was always people trying to break in. There was constant fighting, shootings. People die all the time. My brother got jumped walking from the park down the street by five guys. They took his shoes. My brother knows how to fight. He knows how to defend himself. He was with a friend. They beat up his friend pretty badly. But, you know, growing up, like, in that area makes me on edge. And when I have a conflict with a coworker at Valero,
yep.
I was really mad what he was saying, and he wouldn't stop. So I felt like I was going to do something. And because that's how I grew up, you know, like in middle school.
Yep.
There was gangs, you know, dumb little gangs. And, you know, I've been in fights. I've been jumped. Like, I never really told nobody. Like, it didn't matter. Like, what am I going to get out of telling anybody? You know, I fought a guy or his brother, like, for no reason, just because they wanted me to be in a gang and I didn't want to. And I called them dumb. And I told them they were never going to amount to anything in their life. And because I was a nerd, they thought they could pick on me. But that's, you know, how I learned to defend myself. But I was always on edge because that's where I grew up. And there's a lot of people that could relate to that, especially my little brother, who he just started working downtown. And when he got in a conflict with somebody, he just started cussing at them. And he wanted to hit them. He didn't tell me, but my mom told me. And that's just from the environment we've been in. We don't know anything else. And it's not his fault. And I certainly don't want.
So it's your normal, right? Like, one kid's normal is living in the suburbs and, like, taking their bike over to Billy's house. And another kid's normal is, no, I'm not taking my bike over there because my bike's going
to
disappear as soon as I go inside. And I might get jumped on the way home because somebody wants my bike, right? So it's about really helping people understand that kids are coming into their lives with a very different idea of normality, a very different idea of normality. In some of our communities, child abuse isn't seen as child abuse. It's just seen as discipline, right? Like, no, if you want your kid to go to school, just make sure you beat them really good tonight because they missed school today and they're going to go tomorrow. But what you have to really understand is the science of what hitting a child reinforces, right? What it means. And there's this whole cultural complexity that is the iceberg under the water, right? It's one thing for me as a white woman to come into a training session and say, don't hit your kids. The American Association of Pediatricians says there is never an appropriate time to spank a child, right? But for people who that's part of their cultural identity, you have to find different messengers, right? People who are from that community, And B, you have to find appropriate ways to share these messages with them, because otherwise it's just going to look more like I'm coming in and telling you guys what to do because I'm a white woman and I know better. So I think that this is why this is so important for teachers. So many of our teachers don't look like the kids they teach. This is so important for our medical community because so many of the people that they care for and who are their clients and patients don't look like them, that we need to be incredibly sensitive of cultural differences. And we need to work with communities to design pathways so that children are protected and are nurtured and are enriched, right? But that resonate culturally with these different communities. Because what's going to work for people in my neighborhood are going to be very different strategies than what work for people in your neighborhood, in 78207, your mom's neighborhood.
Right. And for like the people listening, how do we get them involved? Where can they go to sign up? They're like, you know what? I want to be a mentor. I like what I'm hearing. I want to give back. I don't want no children to feel like that. Where can they go right now to become one, to help, to give back? Where can they go?
Yeah. No, I mean, not like I'm trying to pitch my organization, but Communities in Schools, definitely, like Communities in Schools of San Antonio, we run a few different types of mentoring opportunities. So we have the Inspire You program, which is what you're participating in, Samuel, and that's a 4-year commitment, right? You are going to work with the students starting in their 9th grade year, and hopefully that you are going to see that kid through graduation. Exactly. Yep. And you are going to be part of that, like, longitudinal encouragement and enrichment of that teen's life, right? Then we have community mentors. So this is like, if you want to mentor an elementary or a middle school kid, we hope you commit to at least one school year. And we would love to see you commit longer, because the more you're around that child, the greater, right, their development, the greater their opportunities, those kinds of things. So you can just be a community mentor, and you can reach out to Ilsa Garcia or Jessica Hanna. They're the leaders of our community engagement department. They are amazing, righteous women who will hold your hand every step of the way and help you connect with a child who needs great, amazing adult relationships in their lives. Big Brothers Big Sisters, obviously, I got to give them a shout out. They are the OG mentoring agency in San Antonio, and they do it incredibly well. They also have a number of different ways. They have business-based mentor programs. They have school-based mentor programs. And so reaching out to the team would be an well. And then there's organizations like the YMCA, there's Girls Inc., there's Big Brothers Big Sisters, or there's Boys and Girls Club, there's Good Sam, right? There are so many.
So yeah, we cut out at the end. Unfortunately, Lauren had to go pick up her little one. And I'm not sure exactly what happened and cut out, but I just wanted to end on this note. Thank you for listening, first of all. Second, please check out the Trauma-Informed Care through the City of San Antonio. This is the South Texas Trauma-Informed Care Consortium. It is a collaboration between the Children's the Children's Shelter Voices for Children and City of San Antonio Metro Health Department. The consortium brings together community partners across all sectors who are committed to addressing the impact of trauma. If you're looking to volunteer, if you want a mentor, check out the South Texas Trauma-Informed Care Consortium. Even One Day Helps. Also, Communities in School, the Inspire You program, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, just any mentoring program you could be a part of. I cannot stress enough the impact this has on the youth of the children in our community. And it's something that I'm very passionate about. I know I got a little emotional during the podcast, but yeah, that's everything. I'm so glad Lauren was on. I'm sure she's going to listen to this too. So thank you so much for your time, and y'all have a good day. Peace.
Be yourself, carry on. God knows where I'm gone, where I've been. Bless my friends, forgive my sins. Amen. Be yourself, carry on. God knows where I'm gone. where I've been. Bless my friends, forgive my sins. Amen, amen, amen. She threw my heart on the pavement. Tell me where them good old days went. Them days when we stayed in, I cooked for you. Nothing I wouldn't do for you. All I did was stay true to you. You took my heart like a cripple do. Who knew? Who knew? Who knew? God's plan, foolproof. Stay strong, pull through. Now I'm on the beat like Juju. Yeah, cool, cool. Man of God, feeling bulletproof. Yeah, he has showed you what is required of you. Required of you. Be yourself, carry on. God knows where I'm gone, where I've been. Bless my friends, forgive my sins. Amen. Be yourself, carry on. God knows where I'm gone, where I've been. Bless my friends, forgive my sins. Amen, amen. I hope God hears. Free work when I volunteer. Put in work all these years. All the pain, all the tears. God knows I put in hard work since 17 and been off work. Me and my team, hope it's all worth it. Been together since tall shirts and fitted hats. On my own creative path. God gave me blessings, I gave them back. My karma good, I stay with that. Stay with that, yeah. I don't even rap, but I mess around and I made a track. Put it on and they sing it back. Sam I am, no green eggs and ham. Be yourself, carry on. God knows where I'm gone, where I've been. Bless my friends, forgive my sins. Amen. Be yourself, carry on. God knows where I'm gone, where I've been. Bless my friends, forgive my sins. Amen.